Yes. Well, it was either that song or, you know, sisters are doing it for themselves.
Wondering who I am. Secret, I've got a secret. Machine or mannequin. Secret, I've got a secret.
Because two sisters are conquering the world of robotics. They will be at the Robotronica Festival this weekend at QUT in the city. In fact, it's happening tomorrow. Andra Kay has flown over from the US, where she is the managing director of Silicon Valley Robotics. Andra, good morning. Welcome back to Australia.
Oh, it's so good to be back.
Nice. And nice to be standing alongside your sister, Sue Kay, who runs the Australian Centre for Robotic Vision here in Brisbane. Morning.
Yeah, morning.
I love that two sisters are here doing it for themselves and doing it for robots as well. How is it that you both ended up in the world of robotics, Andra?
About 20 years ago, I needed to challenge myself to think about the technologies that were going to be coming, that were going to be changing our lives, because I've always been interested in technology and how it shapes our lives, but I realized that I was behind, kind of chasing after. And there's a wonderful phrase, which is skate to where the puck's going to be, don't follow behind.
Yep.
And I thought that robotics and AI were definitely going to be the enabling technologies of the 21st century based on everything that's come before them. And it was wonderful because, you know, when I was a little girl, that was one of the areas that really interested me. So I've just gone full throttle. Let's understand the robotics industry. Let's understand what's shaping it. And let's understand the ethics. What are the impacts going to be of robotics on society?
All right. And I want to go forward to the future. But first, I want to go back to when you were little girls. So who is it or how is it that this kind of interest and innovation around robotics and science was fostered? How did that happen in your family?
Yeah, well, our dad was a physics professor, and so I guess we always grew up with a love of science and technology, and I think it's fair to say our family were early adopters. So my mum was really at the forefront of trying to computerise university libraries at the time, so she taught herself COBOL, a programming language, to be able to do that, and Andra has memories of learning how to program punch cards, mm-hmm. you know, while crawling around the physics lab.
Wow. So when, mum. About when would that have been?
Oh, you know, when I was in primary school, and my mother taught me how to program, and my father taught me how to build rockets, and they let me build the electronics for the university physics lab.
What? At which university?
Heathcote's, University of Newcastle.
Wow.
So they were great. My favourite one was the oscilloscope.
Fantastic. So this is what, in the 80s?
Oh.
Around about there?
Yeah.
70s even.
Yes.
Fantastic. So dad's an astrophysicist. Your mum was she a teacher?
She was a university librarian.
Talk us through your career path, Sue, because how did you end up at the Australian Centre for Robotic Vision?
Yeah, well, I guess my pathway was through science. So I trained as an earth scientist, did my PhD and postdoc, moved up to Brisbane for that research. But then I moved more into research management commercialization. And then I really just copied Andra because, as I mentioned, our family, I think, are early adopters. And Andra had been going on about robotics for a long time. Being the younger sister, you know, it's kind of my duty to ignore that. But eventually I saw the light. And, you know, I think the most exciting thing about what I do is that opportunity to really see where the future is and be there, you know, working day to day on things that you can see are going to really make a huge impact on how different industries work.
Sue and Andra Kay are both going to be at Robotronica at QUT in the city tomorrow. It's a festival that you can go along to, find out loads about. Has there been a moment in your lives separately where there's been an innovation or an invention that you have gone, wow, this is significant, or this is the future? Can you tell me about one of those moments, Andra?
It was definitely the moon landing for me. It happened when I was in primary school, and everybody, every school class stopped to watch it on television. And of course, my family's background was incredibly excited and involved about the space industry. But seeing us take human steps on another planet gave me the idea that big goals, big world-changing goals were in our reach. And it was really looking around and going, we're certainly changing the world, but are we changing the world with that same sense of purpose and optimism and passion to make the world and the universe a better place? Mm. That had me thinking about how do we have a better understanding on the impacts that technology has on society? How do we improve that system, that transition of commercialization from research into the real world? And how do we be able to usefully involve the discussions around ethics, policies, and regulations at the appropriate times.
And because you wanted to be an astronaut at one stage, didn't you?
Yes.
Why didn't you end up an astronaut?
I was of that generation when NASA pretty much said, okay, we don't have a problem with women really, but you have to be an Air Force test pilot before you can be an astronaut. And women weren't allowed to be Air Force test pilots. So you kind of had that circular logic and you went, well, NASA doesn't want me. It was also, that was one of the things that really had me thinking a lot as a child about why was technology considered not right for women when I was clearly the best in the rocket club and all of those other things. And yet I was being told by the kind of world authorities that that was unusual for a woman, and in fact, women weren't really considered as appropriate for that occupation. I could see no sense in it, and I still don't to this day. Mm. I think that's a bad legacy that we're in the process of trying to shift, trying to change, and it's a slow process.
But you are going to end up putting probably more robots in on more planets than anyone in NASA of that era could imagine. What about for you, Sue? Has there been a moment in your work to date where you have seen something, invented something, witnessed something to do with robotics that's made you go, wow?
Well, the work of our centre, really, every day we get to see the advances that you can make with robotics by applying vision. So for a long time, robots kind of seemed to be in a state of not really evolving very far, because if you had looked at robots in the 1950s and compared them with robots a few years ago, there really wasn't a big change. But there's been an enormous shift just because of computer processing power and advances in technology that have meant that robots can now do so much more than they were able to do. So a lot of people really are feeling that this is a tipping point and that robots are going to actually start being much more common in everyone's lives.
Should people fear robots? Because in terms of job security, sometimes that is an issue.
Well, Andrew is going to be talking about this tomorrow at a very provocatively titled panel session called The Rise of Robots, The Rise of the Useless Class. And perhaps our views differ a little bit on this. I think people justifiably should be concerned about technology, but the world always changes. And I guess I like to be quite optimistic. I think people are endlessly creative and that we will find solutions to these. But I think Andrew has a fair bit of evidence that perhaps it's a little bit overblown, some of this concern.
It's incredibly overblown. And in general, if we look at unemployment rates over the last 120 years, where we've seen huge technological disruptions, the unemployment rate has pretty much stayed exactly the same at around about 4%. So we adapt much faster than is feared to any technological changes. But also, for me, the key thing is that we're living in a very complex world, and experts in one area are not experts in another area. Roboticists shouldn't really be talking about the economics of what they're doing, unless they've made that a real study. And economists should not really be talking about the economics of robotics, unless they really understand what the technologies are capable of. So one of the most quoted studies at the moment, the Frey and Osborne study, is the one that predicted 47% job loss to automation over the next 20 years, or 43% in Australia. And it's based on Department of Labor assumptions that certain jobs are innately more automatable. And that means that, for example, fashion models are going to be replaced by robots. Now, really? I don't think so.
Although I did hear someone's developed some pretty skin-like robot skin at some point this year, because I've been looking at 2017 science discoveries, but you don't reckon that'll happen? The fashion model thing?
No, I don't think so, because it doesn't satisfy what we want out of a fashion model.
Yeah.
And I think you've always got to look in terms of society and say, where are the big problems that we have? Because I invest into robotics companies and I help grow the investment ecosystem around robotics startups. And it makes no commercial sense to develop something that doesn't have a place in the world. And imitation people, it doesn't have a place really in the world. Whereas there are areas where we don't have enough people, the aging farm population, for example, and the need that we have to double food production globally in the next 20 years. We don't have more land either. So we have a lack of labour, we have a lack of land, and we need to really do a lot to feed the world.
Fascinating. So, yeah. Sue, you wanted to jump in there?
I was just going to say, as someone who works in a robotics lab every day, I mean, it is very inspiring seeing all the new technology coming up, but it's also reassuring in that, you know, none of our robots can open a door or go up and down stairs. So the thought of them taking anyone's job anytime soon does seem a long way off. I think robots can be really good at particular tasks, but they're not good all-rounders like people. And so there are examples of robots that, you know, can maybe do a great job playing a game like Go, but they're not going to be able to beat you in chess.
Yeah, right. I did see a great video recently that The Guardian put up, and it was a robot that was trying to stack something on top of a tray, and it was just, it was kind of disastrous and comical at the same time. But obviously that's something that got a lot of clicks. But in terms of, you know, the practical applications of robotics in terms of solving world problems, that's got to be where it's at. What's the most interesting thing you're working on at the moment? Can you reveal?
I'm working Silicon Valley Robotics, I should add, where an industry association that was started by robotics companies to support that transition from research into the real world, which is often called crossing the chasm, because it's the place where government funding finishes and commercial funding hasn't really started. And it is, as Sue was saying, it's the clunky prototype space. It's the space where things really don't work as well as they need to work, or they don't work all the time, and you have all of those accidental things. By the time something works really well, we will take it for granted and we won't even call it a robot anymore. It will simply be a smart product. So the way that we're kind of anthropomorphically biased, we really look for humanoid robots. But at the moment, we're in the process of creating ever so increasingly a roboticized environment around us. And we'll just call it a smarter environment and we'll take it for granted.
Right. So this phone that I have in front of me here, that's a robot.
It could be. And when it takes actions that take action in your environment, so for example, and we call that Internet of Things, you know, if your phone makes the shutters open and close or unlocks things as you come home, for me, that is actually sensing, thinking and acting.
Mm. Wow. Okay. I love your brain. What about you, Sue? What's the most cutting edge or interesting thing you're working on at the moment?
You see, asking me that question, it's a bit like asking me to choose between my children.
Well, just pick your favourite child then.
I've handed you some robot training cards, which you can get at Robotronica, which features some of the robots that we're working on at the moment. And not to have any favourites, but the work that we're doing with our underwater robots in terms of looking at how we can protect the Great Barrier Reef is something that I think is going to have a huge impact on Australia.
So that's Cotsbot.
Yes.
Yeah, these cards are great. I love it. Harvey is in there too, a robot that can harvest fruit. Snakebot, a medical robot for knee surgery. Cartman, a robot that can pick and pack. But you know what my favourite's got to be is Bruce. Because our quiz on this program is called Bruce, the main arterial road through Queensland, a search and rescue robot called Bruce. That's fantastic. All right, if you like the sound of those robots, if you like the sound of Sue and Andra Kay, then you need to be at Robotronica at QUT Gardens Point tomorrow. One day only, Robotronica is on. I hope you get some good sister catch-up time while you're here as well, ladies.
Thank
where you.
You
can talk about things other than robots.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of like those conversations. It so, makes Christmas so much more fun.
So great to have you both in studio this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue Kay from the Australian Centre for Robotic Vision and Andra Kay from Silicon Valley Robotics, robotronica.qut.edu.
ABC Radio Brisbane with Rebecca Levingston.